Longtime fans of the show should be familiar with the lender formerly known as Sue Pullen, and I'm pleased to announce that she's back, fresh off a rebrand and ready to help as Sue Mackey. Sue is a certified mortgage advisor at Fairway Independent Mortgage, an equal housing lender who focuses on finding the right product for you and your needs. She has over 20 years of experience helping thousands of homeowners. Whether it's purchasing, refinancing, or even a reverse mortgage, Sue will help. Sue's licensed in 36 states now, so reach out and let Sue Mackey it happen for you. The best way to reach her is just give her a call at 520-977-7904 or in an email, spullen@fairwaymc.com. Fairway Independent Mortgage has an MLS number of 2289. Sue Mackey has an MLS number of 206048. That email again, spullen@fairwaymc.com. And that phone number is 520-977-7904. Shoot Sue an email and let her know she needs to update that address.
The NFL playoffs are better with FanDuel because right now new customers can bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets. Guaranteed. That's $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. FanDuel, an official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 plus and present in select states. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets which expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Disclaimer time. This is where I tell everyone to lighten up. It's just a podcast. Trading is like that roller coaster at the amusement park. Thrilling, unpredictable, and potentially stomach churning. What works for one person might leave another clutching their hat in the wind. Our hosts and guests, they're awesome, knowledgeable, full of insights, but we're not financial advisors. So don't rush to make any investment decisions based solely on our banter. Always consult with a professional or do your own research. Plus, let's face it, we like to have fun, laugh, enjoy the trading ride together. It's all in the name of good podcasting fun. So remember, take it easy, don't bet the farm, and keep your seatbelts on at all times. Thank you for listening. All right. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the China Shop, where we try to have a win rate on our trades as high as Duke's win rate for the NCAA tournament, which sits at a 75%. We hope all you listeners have a 5-to-1 risk reward, too, like Duke's like Duke's 5 national titles to Arizona's 1. And most of all, we hope you make it professionally, if that's your goal. And we want to help you like Duke has helped the 71 players from its rosters through the years to make the NBA champ.
All right, that'll be the last of the clash unless they're playing each other in the tournament. We'll call a truce, you know. No one else needs to die.
Yeah, I think we're good with that. I was happy to see Arizona beat West Virginia, so you know, I think we held our own pretty well in the econ class challenge that we did here. And then good to see Arizona's men's basketball team doing their part, too.
Yes, yes. All good things.
Goddamn. All right, now that you've gotten your revenge, what's going on, guys? What do you guys what do you want to talk about today?
Well, I want to say this. Kyle's a man of his word.
I am.
And so, for anybody out there that's thinking to themselves, I wonder if Kyle's a man of his word. Well, he is. And that intro is proof. Because he said it could be whatever I wanted and he would read it. And he did that. So, I appreciate it. That starts us all off on a great note.
Well, I'm glad you didn't try to sneak anything really bad in there. Otherwise, nope. I probably would have.
Nope.
I thought it was really fitting because he's a big Duke fan.
Well, last week we had the whole Arizona, blah, blah, blah. Come on.
You serious?
Kyle, I almost wore my Duke hoodie, and I was like, yeah, we'll go Duke hat. This shirt's comfortable.
Let's see. What should we talk about? I think, Baba, we talked a little bit about some topics this morning. One of the ones that seems to be coming up is, like, when you hit the snooze, like, one extra time too many or something, you get that phone call that kind of, like, stops you. Wife needs some help sweeping up something. You know, it throws you off your game. You come down to the desk. You're about 15 minutes later than you meant to be. Like, what do you do? How do you handle that?
That's such a random thing that you would say, Kyle. It's almost as if that happened twice this week to me.
Right. 2 out of 4 trading days.
2 out of 4. God right. Rest Jimmy Carter. So we missed one. So the idea of like coming in last minute, coming in a little bit hurried, those kind of things, I think in a perfect world, you know, we want to act like that's never going to happen. I think this could also bleed over into like interruptions while you're coming in late or even interruptions, because I think that Banks would have he would have some input there, personal experience. But yeah, I mean, twice this week, once we were just getting going, I feel like, and I got a phone call that pretty much changed most of the week for me. I mean, I ended up spending two days in a different state helping in-laws with some stuff. So, you know, and that wasn't expected.
I think one of the hardest things about it is, like, you have this feeling of, like, you're behind. You go, like, the first thing that you want to do is, like, rush to get through all your stuff, right? You got this pressure to try to beat some arbitrary starting point, whether that be the bell for some of you, 15-minute OR for someone like me. Like, you have these points that you're trying to hurry up now and meet, and I found that you just really got to just take a step back and realize, like, you're late. You're already late. You can't be more late than late, so just suck it up and take the time that you need to make sure to do the things you got to do.
Yeah, I think there's, like, a practical side of, like, you can't obviously go back in time, right? So, like, yeah. you're going to land when you land. So, like, this morning was a good example. I came in, I mean, 30 minutes after the open, probably, which, I mean, normally I'm on, try to be on 15 minutes before the open. And my initial, like, when I looked at everything, I think the this was true of the other day as well, that I had to step out and then be done, basically, at least with, like, full attention trading, which you know, I'm not advocating for less than that. But I think you have to, like you just said, I think it's super important to be like, hey, I may have had some great setups that happened in the window that I missed. And the mental thing that you have to settle out, I think, is like trying to make, like you just said, trying to make up for that, or trying to force something too quickly after sitting down because, oh, everything's lined up for us to go higher or go lower. And I would have already been short or long from 20 points or 50 points one way or the other. So now I just got to jump on the first thing that I see. And, like, there's a discipline side to coming in late and then being able to perform. And that piece of, like, the patient side and, like, the like, I don't get a hall pass to just do whatever I want. Like, that piece is really important,
I think. Actually kind of funny. You mentioned another aspect of it that I didn't even think about, but it's the watching or coming in after your favorite setup is already, like, played out. Yeah. Yeah, that's got to really mess with you.
Yeah, it sucks. I mean, and so right. What you just have to, I think, like, it's either from experience or from taking advice that you just have to settle off the idea that there's any way to make up for that. Either you got to come in late, you know, the few times that happens over the course of a year or a month or whatever, and have a terrible day where you lose a bunch, to realize, like, I can't just come in and try to make up for stuff. So then that's where, I mean, that's true of, like, pretty much any trading behavior. Like, once you get a couple scars from it, then you, like, have to develop some measure of discipline or have a system or a plan. Like, if I come in late, this isn't mine, but if I come in late, I'm going to wait 15 minutes before I do anything. I mean, that's very training wheels-like, but that might be helpful if maybe this kind of thing happens a lot for someone. Like, they're constantly having things happen that make them be late to the start. The other thing is just, if you're late to the start, the benefit that you have is a little more unbiased observation. You know? Like, if you sit down, make a plan, start to see things unfold, that's kind of like being in the battle. If we use battle, Rich wouldn't like us to use battle to describe trading, but that's like being in the game.
Right.
When you get there late, you actually have the benefit of, like, people have already played for a little while, and now you have that extra information to use to use that to your advantage.
And you're also not, like, in it. You can actually step.
Yeah, it's like being being a coach sitting on the sidelines, or even sometimes when you're in the stands. Like, maybe if you go to, like, a game at a cool stadium or, like, an arena, like Cameron Indoor, for instance. If you get to be one of the lucky 9,000 people that would get a ticket to sit in there and watch a game or something. If that randomly happened to someone, like it may have happened to me not that long ago. Anyways, yeah, you do get to have, I think that extra information is helpful, because while we would always tend to want to, I would tend to want to focus on all the trades I would have won. On the flip side, like, you haven't taken any stops yet. You haven't paid any expenses yet. So you're kind of, you really haven't lost anything. And if anything, I think other than a few specific setups, and even those, I think you can still use the fact that those setups went to fruition as kind of additional information. Like, you get extra information, but it's the same reason you like waiting 15 minutes. Like, you,
What are they going to respect today? What?
Yeah, I mean, you get a feel for the market. What kind of mood is she in? What dance are we dancing?
Yeah. You know? Are we going to piss everybody off today? Or are we going to
be waltzing today? Yeah. Or are we doing a ballroom special?
You going to step on my toes?
And I think really, like, to sum up the late part, I think it all comes down to, like, I know this is true for me, or especially I would say has been true for me, not as much true right now, but we're all in a hurry. Like, we're all in a hurry to do well. We're all in a hurry to hit our target for the day. We're all in a hurry to achieve whatever this big goal is we're trying to achieve. Like, that's really the, so when I come in late, I've already missed it, all this stuff. And it's like thinking from like a missing or a wanting type mindset mixed with like trying to be frenetic. And whether that's frenetic towards a big goal that you have, and today was supposed to be a big part of that, or whether it's frenetic towards like a P&L goal for the day, or even if it's just, you know, that you're, you know, you just want to do really well and feel like today will be harder because of that. So I think those things have to, I think we have to acknowledge that, but I think that kind of the root of a lot of trading fumbles, whether it's coming in late or whether it's over trading or whatever, or over leveraging, it's all tied to like the hurry. I gotta hurry and make more, hurry and do more. Silly.
Right. Don't think I've ever lost any money because I've been trying to go too slow.
Yeah.
Well, I think from my standpoint, I come from a little different aspect. I mean, I don't mind the lateness of it. Where it affects me is like the random phone call or the walk into the office type of thing, where it's like, you lose concentration. It's kind of like getting everything set up back again. You know, I mean, I'm still watching the certain things, but I mean, in a week, I would say there's probably one to two trades that happen when I get a phone call from a customer, you know, coworker walks in, something along those lines. That's tough to come back from because you were waiting for that setup and it was there and you weren't available. You know what I mean? It's not like you weren't there at the desk waiting for it. It's like you planned for that and it happened. And coming back from that is a little bit tilting in a way. Now, I'm so used to it now, it's just more of dealing with it than it is trying to fight it. When I first started, it was probably a combo of both. You know, not being at the desk on time felt like I was missing out on the market. And I think every new trader feels that way, where it's like, if you're not trading right now, you're not making money, so you're an idiot type of, you know, feeling. And then it was more of like, that kind of went away from just because you're in it every single day, you kind of just lose like the fear of missing out type of feeling. And then it's just a matter of like what Bob was saying, like making your setups. And it was really hard at the beginning, like especially when it's out of your control, kind of like what happened to Baba this week, where it's out of your control and you have to jump on something right away, especially when you have family and kids and stuff like that. And it's hard to come back from that, at least when it starts happening. I've learned to deal with it in a way just because I have to. And I think from my standpoint, like in today's world of just my busy schedule, like when something like that happens, it's almost like take a little breather and just reevaluate, you know, because that trade's going to happen again. It's just a matter of when.
You mentioned the feeling like if you're not at the table, if you're not at the desk, that you're missing out. Like, man, it feels like it took me way too long to get to the point where I finally stopped seeing every move as like potential or a missed opportunity. But it's only recently I finally started looking at them. I mean, like, you know, if there's no actionable setup there, if there's nothing I can risk off of, there's nothing, there's no opportunity there. The market moved. It's just noise. There's nothing
But when you're a new trader.
Yeah, I know.
The market moves and you think you can move the market.
Right. You think you're out there trying to surf every little wave as opposed to sitting back and just waiting for everyone.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, when you're a new trader, I would say most traders like, oh, you know, NQ goes up 40 points and goes down 80. I want to be in that trade for 39 and for 79. You know what I mean?
You want to make 130 points.
You want to be in every single move, and that's just not reality.
Yeah.
That's not what's going to happen.
Well, and I think, too, I mean, I'm sure there are other complicating factors of that, but it's like what's the impetus for that type of thinking? And a lot of times it's like to hurry up and prove that I've got this, I'm good at this, or hurry up and finish if, God forbid, you're trading a funded type environment. No offense to anyone that is, but then I'll hurry up and finish this combine, you know, or hurry up and finish the next hoop they've asked me to jump through, or whatever it is. Like, it all comes back to that. Like, dude, I agree, Kyle. That for me has been like is still sometimes a thing. But definitely big picture, you know, that was like my goal. I want to be short from the swing high, the highest high of the day, and I want to be long from the lowest low of the day, and I want to collect it all in between, you know? And like, if that's someone's like goal, then you would have to have so many entries and so liberal of an application of what qualifies. And then if you're that accepting of any trade that comes along, do you really have any standard for a trade?
I've traded that way. It's not fun. The few times you hit those, you know, tops and bottoms, do not make up for the times when you miss. I promise you that.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's just, I think too, there's some interconnectedness with like being confident with, once you see like, this is the trade I want to take. I'm just as an example, if I get the opportunity into a key level during the changeover from 9 mil, from the 10 a.m. 4-hour candle close, if I can get into a position that aligns with a momentum shift in that time frame and then take that trade from here to here, scaling like this, then that's like the trade I want to have every day. When you see that happen one day and you see it happen another day and another day, it's easy to then stay away from all the stuff that isn't awesome and really just hope that you get that opportunity, understanding that they could still traverse from where you want to be to where you think we should go without you if they don't give you a chance to hit your wagon. But the more times your setup comes to fruition in the time and around the price that you want it, the easier it is to be like, oh, I hope I get something here to get into. And if we do, we do. If we don't, we don't.
Then that kind of ties in, I think, this whole discussion about like being interested and kind of ties into the whole posture discussion again, too. And I think that was kind of what I was thinking about. I was looking back and thinking about the old discussions that we had where you talked about like your I'm trading well posture looks very relaxed. It almost looks like you're not interested at all. And I remember thinking at the time that seemed very counterintuitive. Like, wait, shouldn't you be like, you know, into things? Shouldn't you be like aware and like observing what's happening? And it's only recently I started to realize that like, no, I don't. That's usually the things that precede bad decisions on my part. I've noticed like when I get too into it, too focused, too paying attention, too sucked into like the small time frames. Like when I step back outside of that, I get back into like a 5-minute chart or higher, and then I lean back in my seat. And now I'm relaxed. I'm just looking to see, oh, something interesting happened over there. Oh, okay. Well, now let's get in there. Let's take a look. When I trade like that, man, it just feels so much better, so much freer, so much easier, less stressful, all the things.
Well, yeah. I mean, it wasn't like I was sitting around and thought, I wonder what my posture's like when I trade.
No.
You know? But I look back at some days where I did not trade well, and I don't record my videos as much like as we used as I used to, but during a stretch, I'd look back and like, dude, when I was like just fumbling the bag during a day, I'm like, you know, I'm like, like eyeballs in the thing, like,
right,
lean forward, like just, you know, just trying to take it all in. It looked really silly. And then like the days where, you know, it's like a super easy trading day and we just ding, 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 and oh, we're done for the day. Or ding, 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 and now I'm going to hold this until, you know, till 2 o'clock if they'll let me stay in it. And then like we jump off. I'm literally sitting like I'm sitting right now, you know, just like normal.
The last 2 days coming in, I just had the idea. I didn't even think I was going to take any trades. I basically was coming in fully expecting to sit on my hands and do nothing and going to be happy with myself if I was able to just sit and do nothing.
And there's probably something to that too, like yeah. The expectation of just whatever I get, I'll take, but I'm not going to force anything. And I think that's where I started to realize, you know, the bigger part of that discussion on posture was kind of like one leg to the idea that in the book we talked about last week, Jared Tindler's book, The Mental Game of Trading, he talks about this idea where, and, you know, it's funny because I had read that book forever ago, not really thought about it at all. When I reread it over Christmas break, I was like, oh my gosh, he talks about this. I can't believe I read this at one point and didn't like take this into account. But he talks about like there's emotional and mental like precursors to like meltdowns, mm-hmm. You know, like there's things that we consciously and unconsciously do or think prior to making the dumb trading decisions. And so that posture piece was kind of like a byproduct of that whole thing. You know, there was like the thoughts that you have, the pace of taking trades and stuff like that. And then the posture, like how I'm sitting. And I realized that like on days where I lose more than I would want to, or where I just have a really not productive day, a lot of times there was more than one of those things present, but especially the posture piece, like it became obvious to me in watching the videos. And I think, you know, everyone should record themselves periodically trading, both so they can see their posture and also like so they go back and watch it and look at where your trades are happening on the chart in relation to like what you had anticipated. And like at the end of the day, you look back and go, was I on the right side of that thing? Or was I just wishing a trade into being, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. This is the first week in a long time and I'm going to look back and say, yep, every single trade on this in this past week has been based on something, some sort of precedent. I meant to take it. Exceptional one. There was one trade I didn't. I flattened it immediately when I recognized what it was doing. So felt pretty good about that too, actually.
See, and it's weird because about posture, I feel like I'm the opposite of Baba.
Yeah, so like, what is your good posture?
I feel good like training. when I'm kind of up at the screens, I'm a little bit more concentrated. When I start to get a little bit loose, it's almost like I lean back and I'm like, hey, Jesus, take the wheel. Let's hope for the best here.
But how often are you sitting at your, like, with your good posture focus?
Well, usually I'm standing because I usually trade at work. I got a standing desk. So usually.
Those weirdos.
Easy. It's good for your health.
Right. I have a standing desk downstairs that my wife won't let me use. So.
Yeah, I love it. But usually when I start getting a little bit out of, like, into my bad posture, I almost go to sitting, actually, which is kind of a tell sign.
So that you're sitting.
Probably. Yeah.
That's not good.
Yeah.
So we need to start asking you, are you standing right now? Excuse me, are you standing right now?
Maybe.
Do you need to take a chair away?
Yeah, I think posture's huge. I don't think there's a correct posture. I think there is a appropriate posture for you and your personality, to Banks's point.
Yeah, well, I would say there is a correct, but it's to the individual.
Yeah. And that's it. Yeah. I'm curious if there's more of a correlation between like how intently you are watching versus like how well you're actually trading. Like,
what do you mean by that?
Like for you and me, when we're talking about our postures and getting us into trouble, it's when we're getting like too into things. We're starting to like really squint and trying to see like, oh, is there something I could bid off of there? Yeah, why not? Yeah, I could bid off of that. That's, I could squint enough to make a flag out of this area here. Like, I don't know how much of that is just an indication that we're just trying too hard. We're just too anxious, too eager, too into it.
In too much of a hurry.
Yeah. It's like we're trying to chase the girl too hard.
Yeah. She doesn't find it attractive.
No, she doesn't.
Not one little bit. Yeah, I think that's, yeah. But I think some people, to Banks' point, probably need to like lock it in a little bit. I mean, I know what I'm looking for, and I know where I want to be trading. Like, I'm going to execute around these areas, and if we're not there, then I mean, I'm not interested.
Yeah.
Unless there's something just, you know, unless something shows up that's one of those, okay, when I see this, I have to take it kind of things, which, you know, there should be few of those, you know, we're not looking to do that all the time. But yeah, I mean, I think it really comes to, if I know what I'm looking for, do I really have to like squint and lean and be all jacked to see it? Like, it should be pretty obvious to me.
So when you come in late, do you have like a go-to one that you're, it's like, you know what, we're just going to look for this one guy because we know we can rely on him. We don't have to think too hard about it.
History isn't just boring names and dates. It's weird, messy, and full of what were they thinking moments. The Buck Starts Here dives into the financial fiascos, questionable deals, and outright chaos that helped build America, $1 at a time. We mix in serious history from a fresh perspective, real, deep dives into the numbers and the moments that shaped the country, without the boring lecture. From presidential blunders to almost states, and the time an international war almost started over a pig, we break down the key events that made, and nearly broke, the nation. It's the fascinating untold history you won't find in the textbooks. Subscribe to the Buck Starts Here podcast for a deeper look at presidential history that's anything but dull.
Longtime fans of the show should be familiar with the lender formerly known as Sue Pullen, and I'm pleased to announce that she's back, fresh off a rebrand and ready to help as Sue Mackey. Sue is a certified mortgage advisor at Fairway Independent Mortgage, an equal housing lender who focuses on finding the right product for you and your needs. She has over 20 years of experience helping thousands of homeowners. Whether it's purchasing, refinancing, or even a reverse mortgage, Sue will help. Sue's licensed in 36 states now, so reach out and let Sue Mackey it happen for you. The best way to reach her is just give her a call at 520-977-7904 or in an email, spullen@fairwaymc.com. Fairway Independent Mortgage has an MLS number of 2289. Sue Mackey has an MLS number of 206048. That email again, spullen@fairwaymc.com. And that phone number is 520-977-7904. Shoot Sue an email and let her know she needs to update that address.
No, I mean, the first thing I'm going to do is just, if I come in late, I'm just going to try to see like what the nature of the day is, like what the nature of this day type. What do we have potential for? Are we close to balance, range, like the edge of the range? Are we in the middle of the range? Are we above or below value from overnight? Are we close to, are we attempting to leave a range, or are we, you know, so, and that will tell me, well, here's places I'd like to execute around, like these areas. And then from there, it becomes like waiting for those areas till we get there, you know. And then depending on, like, you know, the easiest thing for me is if we have a larger time frame area, say like a balance area low, well, like that's like a hard pivot line in the sand. Like, we trade below balance area low, I'm going to be short. Mm-hmm. And if we come back above it, I'm going to be flat. And I'm going to wait and see what we do at value area low, or until we break back below balance area low. There's nothing for me to do. And that's like a tumultuous zone, like on a multi-day distribution, the space between balance area low and value area low, is like the no-no square or something. So I'm not going to be fighting in there because this is this true tug of war for everyone. But the easiest thing for me is just to, or the thing that's important to me, no matter when I sit down at the desk, is that I'm executing around those spots, because that actually minimizes the number of trades I could even take.
Yeah.
And that's good for me. The less trades, I don't need to be not ads and scales. Those are great. But like, I'm in a position here, like what, you know, today, whatever, wherever it was, we got it. You know, I got into a position. That's a trade. That trade is done when I'm flat,
mm-hmm.
right? So when the trade counter says that, you know, there were this many round trips in a day, I don't care about that. I'm looking at the chart and going, that's where the idea started, and that's where the idea stopped. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Can we talk about adding for a minute?
Sure.
When it comes to adding, like, are you waiting for like another setup to add to it, or are you like much more liberal with like the way you enter and just lean on the good entry you've already had in order to protect you? Because I hear you talk a lot about like, I'll add if we break through this level with strength.
Yeah. There's two like great add ideas that I try to keep an eye on when I've already scaled a little bit off.
Okay.
You know, if the trade is in theory, if we're breaking, okay. So an example would be like when we traded above balance area high on whatever day that was, Tuesday or Monday, we traded above a daily balance area high. We came back inside a short back inside balance. If we try to escape balance, no. So I short, I scale, because I don't want to be taking a trade between balance area high and value area high. That, like, I don't want to put risk on in the middle somewhere. Mm-hmm. So I put the trade on when we reoffer balance area high. I scale. I think we're going to go into value. And I think that since we have already tested value area low from the prior day, value area low from Globex, or value area high, I think it was from Globex, and we three different times we tested the distribution's value that was below us, I want to be short, scale, and then if we break the rest of the way into that value of the bigger distribution from the daily chart, I want to add when we break into that. And I'd be willing to cut it out if we turn right around, like if they bid it right back out of there. But ideally, there's like gravity and value. So as we come back into that value, I want to put some more back on, because I expect, you know, 20, 30 point, you know, just suck back inside. I can scale inside of my original position. I can scale 60 to, you know, 120 points in that 30 or 40 point, just kind of momentum drop into value. And now we can reevaluate everything. If I want to hold a runner for mid, or if I want to flatten up after that, you know, if we break to new lows, or if I, you know, there's, you know, all these other, so that's one that I would look at.
So that's actually something I've been kind of experimenting around a little bit, because I've been noticing like a lot of, if I aim for like the swing low, like I want to see a new low, I find that a lot of times you don't get those fills. Like you're going to get, it's going to stop short of you like a couple points, turn around, come meet you, break even. Happens a lot. So, but yeah, what I started doing was just coming into the heart of those rotations, into those lows, and saying, you know what, I'm going to take one off on here. And if we continue moving through this trouble spot, well, now that I know that we're showing interest in continuing this, I feel a little more comfortable trying to put that piece back on.
Yeah. So something that you would appreciate, that maybe the random listener, if they're not familiar with this concept, that wouldn't help them very much, but you could go look into it, but you would understand this. So we'll talk about it, and then people can, you know, send us a DM or message us, and we can talk about it, chat. So, have you noticed on my 1 minute chart, and even on my 30 second chart, that I'm tracking moves to the high and moves to the low?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not tracking like gained support so much on that, but I am tracking the moves, meaning we just made a new swing high, a move to the high, and then we lose it. You understand what losing a move to the high is? So I think I said like there's a couple ways that I like to add. One is like based on a bigger structural level, like the other Monday or Tuesday, back into value. I mean, I'll just I won't look at anything almost. As if we trade into that and I've already scaled, I'll just add something for the ride. Like I want it because I know if we slide 40 points through there, and I've seen it happen a billion times, it's like silly. Why would I not? It's free money. And what does it cost me? Like it costs me. I won't let that go against me by more than a handful of points.
That's one of those ones you'll take if I just, hey, there's a big seller just fired off all of a sudden. But I'm short three more. What?
Yeah, whoa. Because exactly. Well, we were coming back into value. Right. Like, let's go. Now, the other way that I think is cool to add, or what can like will get me to scale and scale in a spot, kind of what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, we should go take this swing low and keep going. And then we don't. We like fumble the bag.
Yeah.
So one of the things that I'm watching on that smaller time frame is as I'm getting, let's say I get into a position, I've scaled and now I've got like two left or something, right? And then on the 1 minute, let's say it's moving against my intended direction. I'm not talking about I'm underwater in the trade. I'm talking we've gone 40 points, now we've rotated up 12 or something.
You've gotten some scales off and now you're looking to see if you can squeeze more out.
All right. Hey, this might have some potential to whatever. So if we make a 1 minute move to the high or 30-second move to the high, and then we come down to the activation level to lose that, mm-hmm. right? So we make a high when we're going to activate the lost move. What I've noticed on smaller time frames is a lot of times once we activate the move to the high that we just made, we don't go back and test it like as cleanly as we do on like larger time frames. So it like activates it and then drops. Like one of the things that I have also do often is if I'm in a trade, I've already scaled and it's moving against me, and in 1 minute we make enough of a move that it's a leg that's making a new high and we get to the activation level, I will add at the activation level trying to be a part of selling down to lose that move to the high. We're using short as an example because this whole week has been, a big down leg.
Right.
Now, what would back me off of that is if we fail to lose, right?
Mm-hmm.
So just like on an hourly chart, when we have, this activation level to lose an hourly move, and we wick below it and then come right back above it. And then that is a fail to lose. And that is like a very reflexive, we call them like the NQ special, where it doesn't take the new low and then you go all the way up and make a new swing high. The same thing happens on a 1 minute chart. Well, if I know I'm only 30 points in profit on two contracts that are left or one contract that's left, and then I add for this activation move to lose that swing, that local swing high, and then it fails to lose, then I'll start scaling, parts of that back off because like we're not right. losing those moves. Yeah. This needs to be doing the opposite of what it's doing. I'm not going to add any more. So, but those activation levels are key for continuation or reversal.
You're watching those on a 1 minute, you said?
I will look at them on a one minute. Yeah. But after like, unless I can't get positioned any other way, but it's very rare that I'll just sit down and put up a 1 minute chart, and I would never there would never be an entry that the singular reasoning for taking it would be that we lost a 1 minute move to the high. Like I would never take that as an entry. I think that's where there's got to be more of a narrative than just that.
but
it's great for ads. The same thing is like I treat like trap delta the same kind of way. Like I'll take an entry on that if it's around a key level. But what I really like is to be able to get an ad off of that or use that as a place to scale something else off. Like if we trapped and reverted and now we're going back again, I know that there's active bidders or sellers there. So I'm not gonna have to get, perfect. I don't have to get every point the market offers. That is obviously an area of resistance or support. I'm going to yield some part of my profit into that area because it's like my chart tells me that's smart.
My chart tells me
to do what I do. And then the other, like in line with that as well, Kyle, a place to add is like the Renko. So a lot of times I'll be short like once the Renko, my Renko chart stretching up and the like kind of the trend filter is kind of like, hey, we're bullish. But like on the larger time frame, daily or 4 hour or balance and value, we're into a place where I want to be short. And I think I mentioned this today, like, well, it was the trade where I said, I'm going to give a short a try. And someone was like, well, look at your Renko chart. And I was like, right, but into a key level with this being a little bit flattened out, that's a trade I can take. If I take a trade like that and then we break, everything flips, like the Renko reverses and all the momentum stuff shifts, I'll take the breakdown through like the momentum line, like the moving average thing or whatever it is, the ADX VMA that I have on mine. Like I'll take that as a breakdown trade. Instead of waiting for the retest, if I get positioned and we come to those, I'll add for the break cover. And then when we retest, I'll add again.
Banks, do you even add? I don't know that's really
you didn't believe
part
in
of
that.
Your style. Yeah.
No, not really.
When you're trading like 14 minis, it's...
I don't trade 14.
You know, you already have enough size on, so you just hit it and quit it. He's like some other
traders.
That's
what I said. You just say, Jesus, hold the wheel. Hold on. Let's hope for the best here. No, I mean, so I've done ads before. So with what I'm doing recently, I would say it's a lot easier to add than it's ever has been in the past. And that's really just because it's kind of, I'm taking Baba's idea of value and balance and Purdue, I guess, if you want to mix them. And I'm putting like a little spin on it for range play.
Oh, it's your 20-minute ranges?
Yeah, so when I'm looking at it from that standpoint, it makes it a little bit easier because when you fail to regain mids and fail to regain point of controls, and so you're able to add on continuation breakdown trades because the idea of that is like...
let me just say this. We've only talked about breakdown trades and shorts. If you're a trader, like, just remember the week we just had, which was basically like island down. So we're not like giant bears over here. I'm a sucker for a bid, but this week it's been down. So
tell you what, though, the breakdown trades are a lot easier than breakout trades, in my opinion.
I got a message from Purdue. Was this like a week ago? It said VBA is the way to go, and I'm going to prove it to you both this year.
I couldn't agree more. It's been the heart of everything I do.
So yeah, I mean, so from my standpoint, I do add. I don't add as much as probably most people, or most people that I know that are professionals in
He's
trading.
He's talking about me right now.
Well, I was thinking like, you know, Flary, Baba.
Well, it's more about style though too, like or preference. Like I find that I am most profitable when I'm trading a little bit of a more leg-to-leg type move. And Banks is trading more size and kind of keeping things kind of relatively right in front of him in a way, not like he's scalping for 5 points, but...
Kind of similar to two-year flipper, though. You're trying to get most of it off at
kind
once.
Kind of that vibe, or other people in the room who trade a little more size, but they're... their horizon for the time of their trades. The longer I'm in a trade, the more I'm making. That's just like bottom line. And for Banks, probably that's not the case.
And if you want to go from just the true breakdown setup of trades, like when Baba looks at his setup, I think he talked about it earlier, he looks at the daily, the 4 hour, you know, he kind of goes through this whole process. Right. When I look at it, I look at the previous 20 minute and the previous hour. I'll look at like how the day is set up, but like those are my two main focuses.
So if you really want to know what he's actually saying, everybody, and Kyle, you can be the referee for this. What he's saying is that he needs me to stop trying to trade 200 point ranges one direction when I could trade 60 points, 55, 70 points, and then the other 60 points to complete that, you know, 120, 150 point range, instead of holding on and like trading through the dip. And what I'm trying to convince him of is on the daily and bigger time frames, if you can align your entry methodology around that key spot for the day, that can be the one entry that then you're only looking to sell or buy the rest of the, you know, the rest of the hour or whatever. And so we just fight about that, basically.
Pretty sure that was a 3-second violation. I forgot what I was judging.
I'm not even sure what the question was anymore.
I'm just, you were just saying, like, you don't, you look at an hour and a 20 minute and that's it. And I look at, like, you know, the last
I know few you're days. Saying. And, I'm just giving you grief. If you look at, okay, if you compare it to this, if you, he looks at the daily in 4 hour, I look at the hourly in the 20 minute. If you look at the time that we're in our trades, say mine is 10 minutes, his might be an hour. When you look at the general picture of it, if you look at percentage wise, I guarantee with what I look at in time based and what he looks at in time based, we're probably in the same percentage of trade allotments based on those. Because, I mean, if you look at it, he's a bigger time frame trader in the sense of his setup on the daily. I could give a rat's ass about that. I really only care about what's happening in the here and now.
And there's something to that because, for instance, today, the way we did that low, Banks was begged off of shorts until probably the when we traded to that naked balance area mid in the 50s, and then there was an afternoon short. Now, fortunately you, I pay attention to 50-minute ODR, and so I also took part in that back to the downside this afternoon. I didn't trade the long side all the way back up, but this he would have traded probably could have traded the long side back up. But when you have a bias on the day, that's where a biased trader, like I have a daily perspective that says I want to be on the short side in theory, that's where you get crushed is that type of retracement. Kyle, if you remember when we've talked about and I've said, hey, the bounces will go further than you ever think they should, and then they'll still be bearish on the other side on bearish days that like still trend lower. That this afternoon, like lunchtime to 2:30 or whatever it was, that's what I'm talking about. And that will
break your
kill
soul.
People. Yes.
So you mean the 300 point move straight up?
Yeah. And then the 200 point right back down or 150 point or whatever it was.
Yeah. That's a 50 point ripper on ES. Jeez.
Yeah. So I guess the moral of the story is the necessity to add isn't such a thing if you're trading size, initial size that, you know, I mean, it's just preference, I think.
I think it's completely preference. You know, you got someone like you who wants to limit your risk up, you know, up front and try to put it on in a more controlled manner. And then you got someone like Banks who's looking for shorter, I think, quicker movements, and he's looking to capitalize on those. And you don't have time to add on those like I think you would in a trade like you and I would take.
Yeah.
And I've heard you talk like Banks. Like, you're like, okay, I'm in. This should move quick reaction. I should be out with half now. Like, that 5 seconds later, like, you're looking to be done.
Yeah, and it's not, I mean, I'm not scalping. It's just a matter of, like, I'd say my trades are more time-based around specific movements where I believe a lot more liquidity hits the market. So with my trades, it's like I'm either going to be wrong really quick or I'm going to be right really quick. And it's just a matter of, I mean, if you're in the right direction, you can add to that. But it's like, do you want to add after you put on some size and you're up, you know, 15 points, 20 points, where you can easily just cut your, where I would go break even on that, where, okay, you add to that and all of a sudden your stop moves to break even 7 points below where price is.
Right.
You know what I mean? So from that standpoint, that's the problem with it.
Yeah. The bottom line is I know whenever I try to do it, I got to at least make sure that wherever I add is, it's not going to put my stop or my break even point at a stupid spot. I got to make sure I can at least still keep my wrist tidy.
Well, and I would say most people who are newer to trading probably fall in the same category because they're like when it goes to ads, you could literally, okay, on a trend day, it's easy to add to a trend day where you're just adding on every pullback. But like what Bob was saying is like when you go with that trend day, okay, you move 100 points down, 100 points down, and all of a sudden you get that 150 point bounce up. You're gonna, but again, if your initial entry would have never been hit on that move, let's just say hypothetically, your initial entry would have never been hit. So, I mean, you have to be willing to know where your cutoff point is.
Yeah.
So if you're adding into it, you have to be knowing or like, you know, willing to say like today, I think Baba, we talked about it. He ended up getting out of a trade at like 45. Well, it went up to didn't quite go to where we exactly wanted it to. He did get the fall through, but we didn't make a new low, and then we just went and made a new high. So right. It's like, it. I think it depends on, I would
yeah,
say...
Yeah, you're going to be fine with it.
Yeah, if you're new to trading, you just have to know, like, if you're adding to positions, you're gaining reward, but you're also, you're limiting your risk, too, on that trade, in a sense, because you're basically kinda, cutting, like, you're cutting your trade in half.
Yeah, you're kind of cutting some of your risk away, yeah.
Yeah.
Taking
yeah.
some of your one way.
So
a good I'll tell you this, a so-so ad will ruin a great trade every time.
Yes. yes it will.
I think with adding, since we're kind of in this world of like execution and thought process around that, if I add, like, if I think another thing is just like it's not quantifiable for me yet, and I don't think it ever will be. Like, I won't have a rule about this, but the days where I get ads on and then get those ads off, and then get another set of ads on and get them off, like, that is exciting. Like, two trade sequences where I get two sets of ads or a set of ads on and back off, like, the market is informing me that I am on the right side of the dominant rotations, and that is when I want to be aggressive in adding. When, let's say, like, on a 300-point ripper to the upside, if you're I don't know what you're adding or how you would even be trying to, like, short that necessarily, but if you were, the market's quickly informing you that this is not in your best interest. Look at what your P&L's doing, you know?
Right.
And so that, I think that's the other caveat, is, like, from an experience mindset, or, like, from experience, If you're really nervous about giving up some unrealized P&L or some P&L period, then just trade the trades box to box, or however you want to do it. But if you're able to emotionally separate realized and unrealized, and understand what you're actually trying to do, you're not just like throwing poo at the wall to see what sticks, then the ads will inform you, like, pretty quickly, and you'll either be rewarded nicely for that or not.
I think that's probably a good place to put a pin in it for tonight. I don't know. What do you guys think?
Hey, that's fine with me, buddy.
Right. Well, I think that's going to probably do it then. So join me in thanking Baba and Mr. Banks for joining in. Everybody listening who stuck around to the bitter end, show our panelists some love. Click on those links in the show notes. Visit Fonta Trading to trade with these guys every morning. Check out the website at bandoftraderspodcast.com. When you're done with all that, learn about our second president over at The Buck Starts Here. Be back soon with another exciting episode, hopefully with more banks. But until then, like, share, subscribe, all the things, and have a green week.
That's right. Have a green week like I did. Like I did.
Yeah.
And I think these two guys did too.
Yes.
Yes.
Zaxby's Sensation Salad is so much more than a plain old salad. It's a salad, which begs the question, at what point does a salad stop being a salad and become a salad? Is it when you add Zaxby's fried chicken to it? Crunchy wontons? Asian slaw? Citrus vinaigrette? Teriyaki glaze? Sweet and spicy sauce? Or is it when you top it all with a handmade perfectly fried egg roll? Without a doubt, the egg roll. The Sensation Salad, only at Zaxby's.
This podcast is intended for informational and educational purposes only, does not constitute financial or investment advice, and should not be construed as such. The hosts, guests, and contributors of this podcast are not licensed financial advisors, brokers, or professionals. Any trading or investment decisions made based on the content of this podcast are solely at the listener's discretion and risk. Trading and investing in financial markets carry inherent risks, and past performance is not indicative of future results. Listeners should conduct their own research and seek advice from qualified financial professionals before making any financial decisions. The views, opinions, and information shared in this podcast are those of the individual contributors and do not necessarily reflect the views or policies of the podcast creators or associated organizations.
Produced by China Shop Productions.